welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner once again. As we're recording this, it is Thursday, January 22nd, 2015, just after 3 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here too. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So we've got an agenda. We got something. We're going to talk about the State of the Union. We're going to talk about Microsoft and their latest announcements. We're going to talk about Switzerland and what they did with their currency. And we'll see if we have time. We'll talk about North Korea a little bit. Yvonne also mentioned right before we're starting this recording, there's apparently some things hitting the wire about an update on a unsolved case about a bombing of a Jewish center in Buenos Aires decades ago, and things are happening, but it's just hitting the wire now, so we don't know what the hell's going on. So if it turns out to be interesting, we'll talk about it next week.
Yes.
Okay. But as has been happening fairly frequently recently, although I promise this really, really doesn't happen every week, I have finished a couple other things, and I'll mention them briefly.
Like what?
Well, like books and movies.
Oh, you finished more?
What the hell? You've
got time for this shit? I was just telling Sam, you know, like I unfortunately the last couple of weeks have had not even time to prepare a list for the show.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, I basically just sat here. That last week it was straight from just finishing working. Okay. This week I just, you know, well, I mean, it was like I worked. I had a meeting at a customer. I had to go grocery shopping. I came back, made dinner, took out garbage. You know, put my son has been sick, so I had to give him his medicine, do this other stuff, whatever. And then just, you know, finish just putting him in bed. Okay, yeah. And he's actually not even really asleep, but I've decided to hell with it. He can fall asleep on his own. At this point, yeah. And I'm watching him on his Wi-Fi camp and just sit here. And I woke up at 6:30 this morning, okay. And yesterday I was working up until like midnight.
Yeah.
I've been like I don't know.
I'll tell you, like, there have been various times in the past where I've had schedules like what you mentioned, but lately it's been a lot, you know.
I've been better than that. I've been yearning for some days like that.
You know, like, I mean, I've been today. My first meeting was a conference call that it's one I sometimes go to in person, but sometimes do as a conference call. Today I did it as a conference call. It started at 8 a.m. Then I worked from home from the morning. I had one meeting in the afternoon. I went in to work for the one meeting, came back, and then my kid's actually been sick too the last few days, but he'd fallen asleep before I even got home.
Wow.
And so I came upstairs. I sat at my desk. I finished off the one movie I'm going to talk about, and did a few other things. And then it was time for the show. I mean, and sort of chill. Now, of course, the caveat to all this is kid being asleep before I get home at 5:30 in the afternoon means he's going to wake up.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was saying.
Midnight or 1 a.m. And I'm going to be up all night. But, you know, for the moment.
Well, won't he go do stuff on his own and just leave you alone? Or is he gonna be banging on you to be doing stuff?
Oh, he'll be banging on me to do stuff.
Oh, God.
I mean, he sometimes does things on his own. But he likes to do things with people, too. And his latest thing, by the way, is Minecraft. And so he's all about that at this point, and all about wanting to do it with several people in the world at the same time doing things together. So. Anyway, so I just wanted to say I did finish two things. I finished a novel, No Longer at Ease, which is the second novel by Chinua Achebe. He died not that long ago, last year or 2 years ago or something like that. Anyway, it's the sequel to the much more famous book Things Fall Apart. Both of which are about life in Nigeria in the The first one, Things Fall Apart, is sort of in the earlier part of the colonial period. This one is about that person's grand... I shouldn't say earlier part of the colonial period. The colonial period, the sort of the beginning part of the 1900s. This one was set, I believe, in the 1950s or 60s, somewhere around there. 50s, I think. And it was about the grandson of the guy in the first book. And all I'll say is, if you're unless you're like really into this kind of literature, go for the first one. If you haven't read Things Fall Apart, it was pretty good. It is, you know, about sort of the first encroachment of Western society on traditional African life in Nigeria, and how sort of that all the disruption that caused. The second one is more about adapting to the realities of sort of living in the colonial era. Specifically, a big theme is sort of fighting corruption and, do you take bribes? Do you not take bribes? Things like that. It was okay. But I found the first one more compelling and more interesting and more able to get into. This one was sort of like things happened and then it ended. And I was sort of like, oh, okay. Not that long. But anyway, so if you're into specifically Achebe or these kinds of books, novels set in the colonial world, things like that, I'm sure it's fine. This is actually the second part of a trilogy. Otherwise, it's probably worth checking out Achebe. He's an award-winning author, blah, blah, blah. Go for the first one. Okay. That's it for the book. For movie, and I've alluded to this a couple times, I was watching Birth of a Nation, 10 minutes at a time for like the last month and a half. And I finally finished the thing. It's like 3 hours plus long, silent movie, monochrome, although they do use different colors at different points. So like if there's a battle going on, it'll be red. If they're in a house, it'll be blue, things like that, but still, you know, black and white. And, this is about the Civil War and the aftermath of the Civil War and Reconstruction. Horrible movie.
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
horrible in a sense of it's just a bad movie.
Well, here's the thing. Look, it was number 4 on AFI's top 100 movies of all time that they put out sometime in the 90s. Sam from the future here. It wasn't number 4, it was number 44.
Yeah.
The reason, as far as I can tell, is not because it's a good movie that holds the test of time. It's because it's very well known for originating a lot of cinematic techniques were used in there for the first time.
Gotcha.
So it was released in 1915.
So it was a landmark movie, but because of technology or techniques used.
Yeah.
But a sucky movie.
Well, here's the thing. You know, from a modern point of view, A, it's really freaking long. B, it's a silent movie. C, the acting isn't all that great. D, it's a racist screed promoting how wonderful the Ku Klux Klan is. Because basically, the whole thing is like, okay, it's the Civil War from the perspective that the South was the horribly wronged party, that the result of the Civil War was evil, scary blacks taking over the South, and how the whites had to rise up in resistance to take back the South and put the blacks in their place. Okay? This is fundamental. And of course, it's full of all the racial stereotypes you could possibly imagine. There's the big black guy chasing after and trying to rape the young white woman. There's look, everything you can imagine on that front. It's got, all the black characters are white people in blackface. There are some actual black people like in the background sometimes, but all of the actual characters who play a part in the story are all white people in blackface. And so from a modern point of view, I mean, look, it's an interesting sort of historical thing that this movie was made. And also apparently this movie, in 1915 was the, impetus for the forming of the second version of the Ku Klux Klan was basically done after this movie with a whole bunch of people who were like, yeah, let's bring back the Klan.
After, oh gosh.
After this movie came up. Cause of course there've been apparently three versions of the Ku Klux Klan, basically maybe four, I forget, that are discontinuous. They're not related to each other. So this one was about the one that arose right after the Civil War during the Reconstruction period. And I mean, look, seriously, there's a situation where they're lynching black people and it's portrayed positively, you know, and,
oh God.
And there's another section where, you know, all the evil black people are attacking these white people and, you know, the cavalry comes to rescue, except the cavalry is the Ku Klux Klan, you know? And so look, you know, It's an interesting historical artifact, but it's not. It wasn't a fun movie to watch, because it's a silent movie, you have to actually watch it to watch it. You can't just sort of have it on in the background while you do something else, or you miss the whole damn thing. So I did have to do it a little bit at a time, and I forced myself to finish it. Like I said, it took a month and a half, and I'm glad I saw it from sort of historically knowing what the hell this movie was. But for anybody,
if you're looking for a good laugh, that's not the movie you're pulling out on Friday night.
No, this is not. no, it is not. And in fact, I would go further than that and say, unless you are actually a student of film history,
you don't want to watch this.
Pass on this movie. There's no reason. I mean, if you are studying the history of filmmaking or you're an aspiring filmmaker yourself, there might be some interesting things to get out of this movie. And there's interesting historical stuff about this movie and it blah, blah, blah. You know, if you want to know that stuff, read the Wikipedia page. You don't have to watch a stupid movie.
Okay.
It's a stupid movie. Anyway. I don't know. You watched anything yet? Yeah, you watched had your anything? Busy thing.
I what the hell? No, not really. No.
Yep. And
I have been wanting to watch a certain number of movies. Actually, the other night we rented and it was on iTunes. So my son had gone to sleep and we said, well, let's watch something. So I put up on Apple TV this movie Lucy.
Yeah, don't know.
Don't worry about it. You didn't miss much.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, all right. And we were kind of like, it was entertaining, but we were a little bit like deflated with the end. It just seemed like, eh. But another note. Well, I don't know. This is something I tweeted this out today, and it didn't come out right. Okay, by the way.
The segment is over.
Well, we can talk about an economic section, but there's a guy, there's a hedge fund manager that just came out of the news this morning that lost 99.8% of the money invested in his hedge fund.
Hey, that sounds like a pretty good return.
But we can talk about that. We're going to talk a little bit about that Swiss debacle. We can talk a little bit about that then. So
we'll be back after this exciting message.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
And we're back. So,
we're back.
State of the Union. Now, I want to say first up, the one thing that just, I don't know why it took so long for me to click, but we talked last week about the free community college plan and a couple other things that Obama was doing. And then sometime in the last week, it suddenly clicked to me and I was like slapping my head like I'm a dumbass. Yeah. These are all previews of the State of the Union. Because the State of the Union is always full of this kind of pie in the sky thing that whoever's the president wants to propose all these things, most of which will never, ever, ever happen, to make a sort of a political point against the opposition.
I still remember you and I doing a show way, way, way back when, 20 years ago, when it was a little 20 years ago when we were talking about Bush Sr. doing a speech. This was like right after, you know, when basically his approval ratings were through the roof. Okay, and nobody thought he was going to lose a re-election.
Right. So this must have been right after the Iraq War.
He did this speech, and you and I were hammering him because he came out and it was just instead of like any bold initiatives. I mean, I'm sorry, if you took Obama's speech yesterday and his, there wasn't really that much of a difference. I mean, just maybe the specific details of the different proposals, but it was just this entire pandering session of giveaways to everybody I like, all just continuous. And it just seems like to me that's every State of the Union. And then, you know, you get the standard Republican response that basically you could summarize it in saying everything the other guy just said was wrong.
Yeah, opposition response, whoever.
But whoever it is just says everything the other guy just said is wrong. Thank you very much. Have a good night. Dun, dun, dun. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much.
That is what they do. You know, it's not like I have never seen the opposition response saying the president has made some great proposals. I think that we're going to sit down and come together and work. I don't know. Do you recall ever hearing this?
I can't say that I do. No.
So, I mean, it's just a farce. I mean, this whole thing. I mean, I read in the news today some of the content of it. I will admit the last couple of years I have not watched it.
Last year I made you, I thought.
I think you made me last year, that's right.
Because it was right before the show.
Yeah. Right, because it was right before the show, but I've just avoided watching these. It's just ridiculous. They are inconsequential. In 2 weeks from now,
Nobody will remember a damn thing.
A damn thing.
Here's the thing. There are a couple things here. First of all, in terms of almost everything, I've seen a couple of analyses over the last week, and I think 538 did one, and a couple pollsters put out things. First of all, I'm almost sure it was 538, put out sort of a chart of the last several decades worth of these speeches and sort of what percentage of the president's proposals become law. Right. And I think the highest of any of them was in the 40-some percent area. And most are much low. And of course, in situations where we have right now, where the Congress is in control of a different party than the president, it's even lower. You know, so these things are not at all actually about, you know, this proposal is going to happen. This is all about posturing. This is all about setting up, you know, the sort of guidepost for, you know, a lot of people have described this as, even though Obama's not running again, this is sort of setting up a potential Democratic agenda for the 2016 platform.
Which,
you know,
his joke about that was funny. I did see that.
Oh, about I'm not running again. And then the Republicans start booing. And then he's like, that's right, because I won both of them.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
That's not quite exact words, but close enough.
Close enough. That was funny.
It was good. It was the single most talked about moment of the speech, and it was ad-libbed.
Yes.
You know, but yeah, look, this is about setting out the agenda, saying these are the things that Democratic.
Even Bonner had a smirk about that one. Actually, you could see that he was trying not to, because he knows he's on TV. He was like, you know, he's like. Anyway, so you're saying the agenda, yes, and this whole thing.
It's sort of setting the long-term agenda, and what Obama's going to be doing is for the next few months, he's going to be going around the country making speeches about this agenda that's never actually going to happen. But, you know, it's sort of positioning.
So we'll get something.
The one thing that
I said something.
The one thing that looks like it will probably happen out of this is he said he wants an official authorization of military force for the efforts against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And the Republicans signaled right away as soon as he asked that, that's not going to be an issue. That'll get done. Now, of course, I tweeted when he mentioned that, you know, it doesn't actually mean all that much when the president has said repeatedly that he doesn't need it and he's doing it anyway, regardless of what happens. And in fact, he has been doing it for months and months and months now. So it's a purely symbolic thing. Because it only has actual meaning if the president believes that he's bound to not do it if Congress doesn't give him authorization. And that's not the case here. Nothing else is going to come out of this. There might be some discussion that comes on sort of tax policy, but what comes out of that, if anything, is not going to even slightly resemble the president's proposal. And, you know, and like I said, just like the community college thing, a lot of this is designed as populist stuff that looks good, that Obama is trying to trick the Republicans into looking stupid when they say no to it. Because, you know, like, I mean, we said this last week, there are all sorts of arguments pro and con each one of these individual policies. And, you know, serious, rational people could have a debate specifically on those pros and cons, but what ends up going into the public consciousness is not that kind of debate on the details of the issue. It's, you know, Obama's for better education for our kids and free community college. Republicans are against it. And the Republicans, of course, are trying to do the same thing by structuring some of the laws that they pass because they are going to actually be able to pass things now and then forcing Obama to veto it. It's the same game on both sides coming from different angles where they want to both sides want to put together things that they believe will look popular and exciting to the people and force the other guy to say no to it.
Right.
And that's frankly most of what's going on here. And I think we're starting to see, you know, how the next 2 years are going to look. I mean, you know, we had some discussions over the last few weeks on, you know, are the Republicans going to work to try to cooperate with the president? Is there going to be any common ground? Is it going to go back to, you know, just Republicans blocking everything the president does? It's a little bit more complex than that, because what it's shaping up for, and I think we predicted something very similar to this, but is that the Congress is going to pass all kinds of things that are the president is going to have to veto because, you know, they contain things that just fundamentally he's not going to be able to go for. Of course, you never have to veto anything, but you know what I mean. And meanwhile, the president is going to do as much as he can through executive action. And then what we're seeing here as well is the president is going to propose various things, and probably the Democrats in Congress are too, that they don't have to worry about, just like the Republicans didn't actually have to worry about the consequences of various things they passed while they knew it couldn't go through Congress. At this point, the president and the Democrats are going to be able to propose all kinds of things that they probably would never propose if they were actually in charge, because guess what? They might actually have to do it and live with all the consequences of that thing happening, because any possible thing you can imagine, even if it's got good bits, is going to have negative bits too. And actually implementation and making it happen and all that ends up being messy, and you get your negative sides as well as your positive sides, and it becomes a big complicated thing. And you have to get all of your people in line to support it and blah, blah, blah. But as long as you're in the minority and you know you can't get shit done anyway, you might as well propose all kinds of fun things.
Right.
And that's the picture. I was going to say one other thing there, but I'm zoning on it.
You're zoning?
I'm zoning.
Well, Well, I mean, so bottom line, I think we have a pretty similar perspective on this. I mean, you talked a little bit more about what we think is going to happen in the future as well, given these initiatives and some of the stuff, it's kind of tough to tell, especially this early time, whether stuff is going to happen with these two guys or not. When we've had administrations, we discussed this a couple of times before, we've had parties of opposing, president versus a different Congress. Sometimes things have happened because even the confrontation leads to some kind of a discussion anyway.
And the example we talk about a lot, because of course it happened during our formative years, is Gingrich and Clinton.
Yeah. They were completely at, loggerheads. And despite that fact, they actually did get some stuff done.
A bunch of stuff got done during that particular divided Congress where we had Gingrich and I forget who was in the Senate. Was it Dole then? So Gingrich, Dole, and Clinton actually managed to get quite a bit done. And most of it was compromise type stuff that wasn't what Clinton really wanted, wasn't what Gingrich really wanted. I remember Gingrich got a lot of flack because they had that contract with America and very little of it actually got implemented. But of course, the contract itself didn't say we will implement this. It said we will vote on all of these things, and they did. But once you got past that and once you got past the government shutdown, then everybody started making things happen. I don't know. It might happen again. I'm betting against it still, but it might.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's going to be a lot more dialogue over certain things at some point because stuff is – I don't think the Congress is just going to sit around and pass nothing. These guys will pass something, even if it's just even if it's unpassable, okay? That the president has to veto.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All kinds of stuff will be passed.
Exactly.
But there's no doubt about that. The question is, how much will happen where it gets passed and the president signs it, where you suddenly get the picture of the president and Bonnier and Mitchell and all these folks together clapping while he signs something because it's some big initiative that they all agree on. Right. And
I don't think a lot of that is going to happen.
Yeah, You might see one or two, but it's going to be the kind of stuff that you get really scared about because if they all agree, it must be really bad.
because
that's the history of these things. The things that actually pass with like huge majorities are the kinds of things that at least I see them and slap my head and go like, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing that.
Like we went to war.
The Patriot Act, the Iraq War, the stupid laws, the copyright laws that were passed during the Clinton administration. There's all kinds of shit when you see the two parties in almost unanimous agreement, that's when you should be really scared.
All right.
And we're done. We'll be back and we'll talk, about Microsoft next.
Microsoft. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Back after this. And here we are.
Yes, we are.
So Microsoft announced a bunch of stuff today.
Well, yeah, they did. But here's the thing. So one of the things that I noticed, they skipped. There's no Windows 9. They're going to 10.
Well, yeah, they announced that a while ago.
The naming. They skipped one number for whatever the hell or a damn reason that they found interesting. Now, how do you make an OS exciting, I guess, is my question. I mean, they did show off a whole bunch of stuff that was like 3D viewing this and that and so forth, but
Yeah, we got to talk about the holograms, but there's some other stuff first.
I did not watch a lot of the announcement. What did you see that they announced? Like what?
So I'm actually pulling something up now to try to remember. Because
you're in the same boat as I am.
Because I should have, you know, of course, we took a break. And during the break, I could have brought up my little cheat sheet and had it all ready. But did I? No.
Well.
Yeah, no, I didn't. So, you know, look, there's the operating system itself, a couple of the features that I do know off the top of my head. One, they're really pushing universal apps that will work on phones, tablets, laptops, desktops, all form factors as sort of one unified thing. So you write the one app, you make it adaptive to size, etc. Instead of having, you know, here's your tablet app, here's your computer app, here's your phone app, etc. They're pushing that. The interface itself, you know, the start button is there. I don't, they recovered a while ago from removing that, and everybody thought that was stupid.
I was using a Windows 8 computer recently, and every time I hit start, it just confused the shit out of me. Can I be honest? I was like having so much trouble navigating that thing. But I will say this. I know it was a big change, okay, to do that. But after I figured out where stuff was, it wasn't that bad. Okay.
Anyway, they're putting it back how it was.
Okay. Maybe they could go back to Windows 3.1.
Oh, that was a wonderful one.
Oh God, that was so awful. I remember that. I mean, that was the one that really, it was DOS underneath, but it was just this stupid like thing that laid on top of it, which supposedly added graphics, you know, to stuff. And the icons really they were like shortcuts to stuff. There were no files. It was just, oh my God.
We're showing our age here.
Yeah.
Windows 3.1 was a long, long time
ago. And it was bad. I mean, it was bad. Bad, bad software. God, it was awful.
Anyway, they added a few other things. Like they're doing notifications now. It looks just like the OS X notifications, basically.
Well, you know, what was that phrase that Steve Jobs said? It's like to be an artist to steal something like that. Something like
you're
that.
You're doing really well on the quote here.
Oh, yeah. God, yes. I'm sorry. Nobody hired me for my quotability, I guess. Anyway.
Anyway, I'm trying to remember real quick if there's anything else on the software, because there were some interesting hardware-type announcements, too. I know I have it here. Okay. First,
here's the thing about
here's some hardware stuff. They announced a huge TV size. The dog wants to leave the room. There's a huge TV size Surface.
Okay.
So it's like the Windows Surface thing, except it's like, I forget. It's like a 40 something inch TV.
Hadn't they done one of those like before that was like a table? Years ago.
Well, yeah, but this one's like you hang it on the wall kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. And?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I found a list.
Okay. Okay, all right.
Windows 10 has 1.7 million beta testers already.
Okay.
Windows 10 is a free update, so they moved to free updates like OS 10.
Yeah.
For a year, apparently.
For a year.
Yeah.
Right.
Windows 10 mobile syncs with the desktop, integrates with Skype for calls and messages.
I wonder where we've seen that before.
free Office Suite apps with Windows 10. So Word, Excel, and PowerPoint are all, you know, going to be part of the thing, I guess.
Well, but I guess that they're going to turn Windows into a subscription. You don't buy it because they said it's free for a year.
The updates are free for a year.
No. This No, yeah. I think they're probably moving to the same subscription model like they've got for Office 365.
So what it says is Windows 10 will be a free update for users running Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 on PCs or notebook, and for Windows Phone 8.1 users on mobile. But that offer is only good for a year, so they're not totally killing the notion of a free update. So unless it's only free for a year, because after that comes Windows 11, which is also free for a year, et cetera, et cetera. But they've said the update is free for a year.
I don't know what the hell that means.
Yeah, just, I think a lot of people express confusion about that. There's going to be an Xbox app for Windows 10 to try to somehow get gamers to be social, some sort of connectivity social thing for people doing games. A brand new web browser called Spartan that has a article reading feature and PDF markup tools.
An article reading feature and PDF markup tools. Are you fucking kidding me? Okay. No. All right.
Yes, I know. Other browsers have had that for a long time.
Yes, I know.
Xbox One games will stream to Windows 10 PCs. Microsoft made Windows Holographic, an augmented reality extension of Windows 10.
Now that looked interesting.
And we'll have to jump to that in just a second, because then Microsoft HoloLens, which goes with that, which is how you look at this stuff. So the only thing out of all of this mess that really seemed really interesting was the holographic stuff. Now this is,
yes, it did.
You have poo-pooed 3D and virtual reality stuff before, but this is augmented reality kind of stuff. Right. They use a different word for it because of marketing, but it's basically the old idea of augmented reality, which is you put on the goggles, but instead of seeing a completely virtual world, you see the real world with virtual things overlaid on top of it.
Which that to me is cool. I like that.
Now, okay. You know, as with all of these other things, these glasses look goofy. But unlike, say, Google Glass, which also, you know, wrapped themselves up and said goodbye until they come out with a new version, you know, this one, they're not marketing this is something you're going to wear all the time.
Right.
This is going to be
that you kind of like you're working at home and it's like, you know what? I'm seeing some of the pictures. It kind of looks like what the heck that movie that was like with Tom Cruise, Minority Report.
Minority Report. Right.
Yes.
So the idea behind this, and they showed a number of examples and they let some journalists look at this, but they made them leave all of their recording stuff, all of their phones. You couldn't get that. And apparently the reality wasn't quite as good as sort of the demo video they showed. Uh-huh. Like they showed some examples of like basically, I mentioned earlier Minecraft how into that my son is right now. So one of the examples they showed is Minecraft in the real world, where instead of just you're in this world on your screen and you're building stuff, you know, it's built up on top of the furniture that's in your room, you know, out and you can build stuff and you can poke things and you can do things like that. They showed other examples where you can see like a bunch of their examples included like little virtual motorcycles you could look at and spin and things like that. There are also examples, doing sort of Skype type calls, but it looks like the other person is there kind of thing. So a bunch of things like that. And they're saying that it's going to ship in the same time frame as Windows 10, which they haven't announced a specific date yet. But it's this
year or two.
Yeah, it's not. This is not like 5 years out or anything. Within a year.
The next. I'm expecting the next 18 to 24 months is what I was thinking. Okay, so
is it even that far? I thought it was closer than that.
I was just expecting. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they didn't announce an official ship date, so I'm just like usually, you know, with this kind of stuff, that's what I was guessing. I didn't really see a ship date.
Right.
Myself.
I didn't either, but I've sort of got the impression that we're, you know, this year, closer. But I don't know.
I mean, I thought it would be longer just because, I mean, this would be one of the between 7, 8, and 10. I mean, remember how long you went between XP and...
Windows is not on the every year cadence that Mac OS has been on.
No. I mean, now, this
of course,
is like...
Of course, Apple's gotten a lot of criticism for some of the more recent releases being sort of half-baked and people saying, really, go ahead and take 2 years if you can make it better, but...
Yeah, but still, I mean, you know, this is quite a substantial acceleration of the Microsoft upgrade cycle. I mean, as it's been from before.
Well, and you're seeing a lot of, you know, a lot of people are talking about this is yet another thing that Nadella, the new CEO, is doing. This is like him starting to put his mark on things. He's also done a variety of things saying, you know, our software has to be on all devices. It can't just be a Windows world. You know, you see the Office stuff for iOS and all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, it takes a long time to move a big ship like Microsoft. But you're starting to see them looking at doing more interesting things again. Now we'll see, you know, what the implementation is, because they've often sort of put out, you know, really cool demo videos. And then when it comes to like real life, when the thing comes out, it's like, oh, they didn't quite do that very well. Right. You know, so we'll see like when this thing is actually live. Cause yeah, this is potentially cool functionality. Now would you use it every day for everything? No, I'm probably not going to use this, you know, to do my email or surf the web, but it's undoubtedly pretty cool for game type things. It's undoubtedly pretty cool for any sort of, you know, 3D modeling kind of stuff. It's probably going to be pretty cool for video conferencing and those kinds of things if you've got an appropriate camera on the other side that can do the 3D stuff. So there's a lot of potential here. There's a lot of potential here. The question is, you know, is it really as close to reality as they're putting out right now? And also, once you actually have real life people have their hands on it, as opposed to very constricted demos under controlled conditions, does it actually live up to the promise?
And well, I hope so, because it looked really cool.
It does look really cool. But, you know, honestly, Microsoft often, their old history, and maybe they're moving away from this, but their old history is the first two versions of anything they release is total crap. But by the time they get to the third version, it's pretty decent. And once you get beyond that, it can be more solid. So this may be something where, you know, version one of this releases in 2015 or maybe 2016, and people are like, okay. I see a lot of potential here, but it's still not good enough to really use for real applications. But then the next one after that is like, okay, now it's getting here. And you see people forced to respond to it. Anyway...
Bing, bing, bing.
Time up for Microsoft.
Time up.
So we'll be back after this, and we'll talk real quick about we got Switzerland and North Korea on agenda. We'll be back, and we'll talk about both of them. Back after this. Okay, here we are. I think North Korea is going to be quicker than Switzerland, so let's do it real quick. The main new development this week was, first there was a leak of an old Snowden doc from years ago about U.S. cyber activities trying to infiltrate various computer systems across the world. And then there were some leaks basically saying, look, you know, we got into North Korea's systems years ago. The reason we know that they're responsible for the Sony stuff is because we're in all their systems and we can watch what they're doing. And they did say also they didn't see it while it was going on, but because they were already into everything, once this was revealed, it was fairly easy for them to go back and reconstruct what happened. Now, this is, you know, I think on a number of conversations we had about this, where we talked about the researchers who were skeptical of the FBI's claims on this. We mentioned, and in fact, most of these researchers mentioned, if not all of them, had caveats that said, look, what the FBI has put out is very flimsy and very weak, and there's all kinds of other evidence pointing in other directions, too. But they've probably got stuff they're not telling us.
Exactly.
And I mentioned on the show, I thought specifically the stuff they weren't telling you was NSA shit.
Right.
You know, they've got, you know, whatever they think they know is super, super top secret surveillance stuff. And of course, this leak came out, you know, and of course, one of the questions is how aggressively will this leak be pursued as compared to some of the others? But, you know, basically, look, this validates that idea that, look, they know something, things that we don't directly. Of course, part of the problem with that is nobody trusts them anymore. So even when they say that, it's like, oh yeah, okay, you say you got something, but unless you make it public and show it, there's still going to be people who are highly doubtful of that. And, you know, look, it's not like there's not plenty of precedent for the U.S. government making shit up. In the past, we got, you know, of course, we got the Iraq war justifications, the weapons of mass destruction there. We've got the Gulf of Tonkin instance, for God's sake. We've got Remember the Maine going back over 100 years. You know, there are all sorts of incidents in U.S. history where, and some of those were the government, like, I know the Maine was Hearst or whatever. But anyway, like, there are all kinds of examples of, you know, them saying there was a really solid case when really there wasn't. And, you know, who knows? There might be some of that going on here, too. But, I come back to, in the current environment, they would have had to be idiots to come out and so firmly put the blame on North Korea unless they had something.
Right.
Relatively
exactly.
Solid.
Exactly.
You know, because it's not like, now, if Obama was beating the drums saying we got to go to war with North Korea, okay, then maybe I believe, okay, maybe they made some shit up.
You know, but I guess I haven't heard us say that we're going to war.
But the reality is we're basically actually moving the other direction where, you know, okay, we did some sanctions on them. We did a little bit of minor retaliation, but we're not, it certainly doesn't look like we're doing any sort of major aggressive effort here. So there's not the need to sort of build up the case to justify the public aggressive effort. So, you know, what good would it do to make something up?
I mean, honestly, if what do we do? We attack North Korea, then what?
Yeah. I mean, and look, you know, in the end, what happened here? Sony got embarrassed about a dumb.
Yes. Movie. Yes.
And about a bunch of other things. But,
yes.
You know, it's not the same scale as if people died.
Right.
You know? And frankly, Sony probably ended up making more money off the stupid movie the way they ended up releasing it after all this publicity than they would have otherwise.
Because I don't think it would have sold a hell of a lot because it just didn't look that good.
Nobody, the movie would have come out, it would have sunk like a rock, and no one would remember it.
Exactly. You know? Yes. It would have been just one of those disasters in the theaters. Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see. I'm sure, you know, more may come out. But frankly, this is already dropping off of public consciousness incredibly quickly. You know. So which of course also means, you know, all sorts of people will forget the security implications, and all these other companies who probably should be going, oh shit, let's shore up our own security, are probably like, yeah, oh well, they got over it. We would, you know, we don't have to worry about it.
Right.
So, okay. Now. Switzerland and economy stuff.
Well, okay, so we started the show, so I mentioned this one thing before going to the economy. So I mean, we've had these collapsing oil prices and currency swings that have impacted the markets of, like, roiled them left and right. Countries are going bankrupt. You've got other things. But this guy really topped the cake. There was a guy who tops the cake.
Sure, what I'm trying to do. Whatever.
Oh, whatever. Fuck something. This guy has just took the cake. Wait, the cake.
Took the
whatever.
Cake. There you go.
There you go. He used to work at a hedge fund that the billionaire who ran it is in jail right now for insider trading. Raj Rajarantham, if any of you guys ever heard about him, there was a big, very big insider trading investigation. The guy had sources inside a number of companies, and he was paying people in order to get information. And basically, it's a very rare case of a guy being convicted recently of insider trading, and this guy went to jail. And he worked in the fund. Now, this guy had not been convicted of or accused of insider trading. But he created his own fund and got investors to give him $100 million to invest. Well, the guy today sent a letter to his investors that saying basically, you know, I kind of got a little bit – his word was like he was sorry for his overzealousness in trying to generate returns. And basically that out of $100 billion, there was a grand total left over only of $200,000. He went down 99.8%. I'm still...
That's an awesome return.
I mean, in a year where the stock market was up and you managed to... apparently, in the letter, he stated that I guess that the returns weren't doing all that great near the end of the year. And basically, the guy went on all Vegas crazy, okay, all right, and just, you know, made a whole ton of crazy bets, okay, near the end of the year, super leveraged, and just he managed to wipe out the $100 million.
Oh, if he was super leveraged, the good thing, at least he didn't go negative.
At least he didn't go negative. He did have left over $200,000. I'm sure that everybody that invested, you know, a ton of money with him is so comforted right now that he's got a whopping $200,000 in the bank. Okay, all right. At this point, so that was like interesting. Well, and in that vein, one of the things that happened recently was this whole thing where Switzerland had been for years, because so many people and I think I talked about this and I mentioned years ago, I think we had a question on the shows like, what currency is the most stable that I would put my money in? I always said Swiss francs. A lot of people with a lot of money recently have been doing that, especially Russians, for example, and a whole bunch of guys that are trying to get their money out of Russia. They certainly don't want to put it in the U.S. Okay, all right, that's for sure. So they've been buying up a lot of Swiss francs. And so the franc kept going up and up. So the Swiss Central Bank trying to not get their currency to be so crazy expensive, okay, that it would make them uncompetitive in exports, they had been just printing Swiss francs like there's no tomorrow to just hold it off. Okay,
they had decided on a peg, right, to keep it.
They
at
had
a
decided
value.
On a cap. It wasn't a peg. They had just decided a cap. They said that,
but it had been stuck against that cap for a number.
Right,
of years.
It had been stuck against that cap for a while. Okay, but they had been just running the printing presses just to make sure, because there's just such high demand that they just didn't want for it to keep driving the price up. Well, the problem is that the European Central Bank has decided to do this quantitative easing thing,
mm-hmm.
and it's driving the euro down. And they're printing so many euros that this was causing – they said they were going to do a buying program over 50 billion euros a month. So that's like – Jesus, like 600 billion euros. It's like – I don't know. It's I think it's about the size of the entire Swiss economy, okay, close to that in purchases. Well, look, the Swiss just couldn't keep printing bucks like that, okay? They just couldn't. And so – they decided that in order not to even give a whiff of like an advance notice to traders and other people so they could make money insider trading, the Swiss, they just dropped the bomb and just said, well, we're stopping the peg. Look, the moment that they announced it, the market was open. The biggest currency swing, I think, in history happened in 1 second. The Swiss franc went up 30%, okay, inside the same day. I've never seen a currency swing that much in one day, ever. That happened. At that same moment, a whole bunch of like investment companies, there was like multiple that completely ran out of capital. They had apparently a whole bunch of investments that were leveraged, you know, as well, that basically wiped out their capital because they were, you know, betting on the stability of the Swiss franc, and they got wiped out.
And people have also mentioned people in a variety of non-Swiss countries having their mortgages in francs.
Yes, absolutely. And all
they
of
got
sudden,
screwed.
Yeah, they got totally screwed. Yeah, so, you know, it was a shock, to say the least, to a lot of people. So... I don't know if there's going to be a long – I mean, other than a whole bunch of currency trading people really just got absolutely killed, I don't know if there's a significant long-term event, long-term damage from it. But it sure as hell was interesting for a couple of days to see this happen. That's for sure. I don't know. You've got this confluence of situations in Europe and with Russia and oil and like the capital flight from the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union, Jesus Christ. No, it's not 19. What year am I in now? What year are we in? No, there's no more Soviet. The Soviet Union been gone for how long? Anyway, Russia, okay,
long
with
time.
All this, right.
89? No, 90.
90? 90, 91. Well, it's just that the other day, because of the whole there was an article the other day in The Economist was saying that apparently Putin controls the press so much in Russia, they are not talking about anything about the economy in the press.
Yes.
Not one thing. Not one word. And so the thing that they're saying is like, well, it feels like the old Soviet times when, you know what, if there was really a crisis, you could guarantee you that there would be nothing said in the press about it. Okay, not one. So
wrap it up. We're out of time.
So I don't know. I mean, you've got this confluence of situations over there. You've got the European economy that's slow. You got Russia going on, and then you've got the Swiss that are just trying to keep everybody just like just stop buying their. You know, I'm like stop. Okay, yes, I know you want our money here, but good God, not so much of it. It's just I don't know what. It's just interesting to watch right now. I'm just not sure what the outcome of this whole thing is going to be at this point. So, a lot
good,
of stuff.
Bad, indifferent.
It's going to get a little bit wilder, I'll tell you what. That's what I'm saying. There's going to be more to come. I just don't know what direction it's going to be, though. I got to tell
now,
you.
Do you think the effects of all this stuff limited to Europe?
No, it will not be. No. No.
Now, do you still poo-poo my prediction of the U.S. going into recession?
The U.S. is not going into recession. As a matter of fact, that was a big...
Come on, Ivan. The entire global economy is going to collapse.
Here's the thing. They're all sending their money here, too, aside from Switzerland.
Uh-huh.
That's why we're not going to the recession, because they don't want the money in Europe. They don't want it in Russia. They don't want it there. They don't even want to send it to China, so they're sending their money here.
So wait, so the rest of the world is going to go to hell, but we're going to make off like bandits.
At the rate we're going, yes, it's crazy, but, you know, to a certain extent, yes.
I guess from a purely selfish point of view, that's cool.
I know, exactly, but Jesus. Oh, gosh. You know, I know we talk about our political system and everything. Oh, we're so screwed. We can't agree to anything or whatever. And then everybody looks at everybody else. It's like, oh, shit, I don't trust anybody else with my money. Fuck it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess anything else, or can we wrap this up?
Oh, we can wrap this up.
Okay, I did have one follow-up note from our first segment that I meant to say, but I didn't. No Longer at Ease, I actually listened to as an audiobook from Audible.com, and Birth of a Nation I watched on Netflix.
Okay.
So you
didn't actually read a book. You actually listened to it.
One I listened to.
That's a bunch of fucking bullshit.
I'm currently also reading a book at the moment. And when I eventually finish it, I will talk about that. But yeah, no, I've been listening to things while I commute. And I've been, as a result, I've been consuming, not reading, more books.
Let's just be clear.
And I do make a point. I will only get the unabridged ones. Because occasionally you will find available an abridged version of a book. I will skip those. I will not do the abridged versions. If I'm going to listen to it or if I'm going to read it, I want to read the real thing, the whole damn thing.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll make sure. But you know, to keep in mind that you need to clarify what you're saying about you read a book, whether you actually read the book.
That's why I clarified here. I want to say when I read a book, I want to tell you, is it a physical book? Is it a Kindle book? Is it an Audible book? When I watch something, I'm going to say, you know, did I see it in the theater? Did I watch it on Netflix? Did I watch it on HBO? What the hell was the deal? So.
All right. Well.
Or Blu-ray or DVD or VHS, I guess.
I do have a VHS plugged into my TV. Now I have a VHS
plugged into my TV too.
I haven't used it since I can't remember when.
The last time I used it was to test to see if it worked, but I do not remember ever. It did in fact work, but I do not remember the last time I actually watched something on it other than like a few seconds.
I think it was sometime in the last 5 years because I wanted a copy of the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner movie. I believe, and they only sent it to me in frickin' VHS.
Well, there you go. Anyway, thanks for joining us for yet another show. This has been Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com for any questions, thoughts, whatever, feedback. Or you can reach us on Twitter. I'm at abelsmay. Yvonne is at IMBo. Tell all your friends to listen, review us online, any place you can find, tell your friends, and have a great week and tune in next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.